From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Liquor laws are notoriously complicated, but one attorney is untangling them in the name of transparency. Becky Lundberg-Witt of the Community Law Center is the blogger behind Booze News. She's attended dozens of Baltimore City Liquor Board hearings, worked with community associations to take on problem bars, and written up the details in easy-to-digest blog posts. Witt describes the shortfalls in the process, from zombie liquor licenses to how complaints are investigated.
The problem is that if you are complaining, let's say, about noise and it's keeping you awake, the liquor board's policy is to inspect within 24 hours. So if they inspect the next morning, it's not noisy anymore and they can write complaint unfounded.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The Baltimore City Liquor Board, formerly the Board of Liquor License Commissioners, is a state agency responsible for regulating the sale and distribution of alcoholic beverages. Since 2016, commissioners have been appointed by the mayor and city council president. And while the Liquor Board is watching over bars and liquor stores, Becky Lundberg-Witt is watching them. Becky Lundberg-Witt is a staff attorney for the Community Law Center, the nonprofit law firm that provides legal services to community and nonprofit organizations across the state. She writes the center's Booze News blog, which details the happenings at the liquor board hearings. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much.
What is the role of the commissioners?
There's three full commissioners, one alternate who shows up when someone's sick or out of town. They are in charge of the hearings, and they make the decisions at the hearings. They also have some supervisory power over the staff. There's an executive secretary and then a bunch of inspectors and administrative staff underneath that person. And I guess what I would like to see from the commissioners in terms of their role is more of a sense of what is this agency for? The state law says that they exist to improve public health and safety. And right now it just seems like they exist to go through the motions and do kind of the bare minimum in terms of inspections and hearings. But I would love to see an actual mission statement and goals about improving public health and safety in Baltimore City.
How did Booze News get started?
Sure. Well, Booze News was started in 2013 after the legislative audit came out of the Liquor Board, basically showing that the board was highly dysfunctional in many ways, which was something that communities had been telling us for a long time. And so the blog was started as a way to keep an eye on the board and to see how they would make changes to address the issues that were set out in the audit. So it was started in 2013 in the summertime. It went until early 2017, where we decided to take a break from it because the board had really made a lot of progress. There was a fairly new board in place that was basically following the law when it came to the hearing. So we decided to end it there, but we're revamping it a little bit.
Yeah. So why the reboot, and how will the new version of Booze News blog be different from what we saw before?
Sure. So we decided to reboot it because of actually two hearings that were last year. One of them got a good amount of attention. It was for Waverly Tavern, which is a packaged goods store and tavern in a residential part of the city where the community had come in and testified about violence, including more than one shooting, fights, people drinking in the street. The police said that it was the most dangerous corner in the Northern District.
This is Old York Road and 38th Street.
Right? Yes, exactly. So it's a residential corner that happens to have this tavern there for historical reasons. Right. So it's there's no reason for that corner to be the most dangerous place in the district besides the fact that this bar was there. the police department was spending $60,000 in overtime for this one bar just to park someone there. And the board said, you know, we don't have anything in our file to show that there's any issues. So
nothing in the file that reflected
really.
Any of this.
No. Because when people call 311 to complain about issues with the bar, they were so severe. The issues were so severe that it was being directed to the police department instead of the liquor board. And so there weren't very many 311 calls, but there were tons of 911 calls. So there was kind of this disconnect between the police department and the liquor board. And the board said, you know, we don't have anything in our file. Our reports show that it's fine. And so we started to think, you know, the hearings are running according to the law, but what's happening before the hearings? Like, what is the pipeline for a complaint to get to a liquor board hearing? And there must be something that is not working in that process. So Booze News, the revamped version, is going to focus more on like a case study model. We're going to highlight one establishment from each of the 9 police districts in Baltimore City. And we started with Waverly Tavern. The next one that will be coming up is Red Fox Lounge, or formerly Red Fox Lounge, now Red Fox Liquors, on the corner of Pennsylvania Avenue and Fulton, which is in the Western District. That will be the next post, and kind of see what's in the liquor board's file. What are the inspectors seeing when they go out compared to what are the police seeing? What is the community seeing? And how can we kind of facilitate more communication between those agencies and make it so that the board is actually hearing those complaints?
So how do you figure out what your targets are going to be?
Sure. Well, it's a little bit of my choice, because there are many cases that are just like Waverly Tavern throughout the city that people tell me about all the time. So I'm kind of choosing establishments that I've heard a lot about just from talking with community members and making sure that we're spreading them out throughout the whole city so that each part of the city is getting a highlight. Another kind of case that will probably be a post is Utah Liquors, which is in the Central District. It's right across from Lexington Market. And about a year ago, the police did an undercover operation and found that the employees of the store were actually selling cocaine and heroin. There were drugs found in plain view in the back room of the liquor store. There were drugs and money behind the register in plain view. So that's, again, another situation where you say, okay, the liquor board says that they're inspecting every license 4 times a year. What are the inspectors writing down when they go into an establishment where there seem to be drugs in every nook and cranny of this liquor store? Why are their inspection reports coming back? Everything is totally fine, where the police say that this liquor store is actually a source of drug distribution in the Lexington Market area. So that's another one that will probably be coming down the pike.
The inspections, I gather, are not based on community complaints, the inspections that the liquor board does.
So some of them are. They do routine inspections. That's what I was referring to with the 4 inspections per year. And then when they receive 311 complaints, they have to be coded properly in the system as a liquor license complaint, which people don't always do. So if they see an issue with trash, that may end up getting coded as a housing department complaint and not a liquor board complaint, so the liquor board will never see it. So anyway, the 311 complaint goes to the liquor board, and then they do an inspection based on that complaint. The problem is that if you are complaining, let's say, about noise, and it's 11 o'clock at night and the bar across the street is way too loud and all their doors and windows are open and it's keeping you awake, the liquor board's policy is to inspect within 24 hours. So if they inspect the next morning,
guess what? It's not noisy.
It's not noisy anymore, and they can write complaint unfounded. So that, it's not always a system that works very well.
One of the problems in the past has been so-called zombie liquor licenses. What are those?
Zombie liquor licenses, a previous version of the board was not following the law. Basically, the law says that if a license is not being used for 180 days, then the license expires. It's a way to get rid of licenses because public health experts say you should have no more than 1 license per 1,000 residents. Right now, we have I think around 1,100 or so licenses for 600,000 people. So there are more licenses than we should have. There's been a moratorium in the city for, I think, 50 years to try to get that number of licenses down. So the board is supposed to enforce that law and say, okay, if you've been closed for this amount of time, you can get an extension, but if you've been closed for a certain amount of time, that license expires. But previous versions of the board were not doing that. They were ignoring that. They were giving extensions that the law doesn't allow. And so those we called zombie licenses. And I will say that to give the current board credit, that they have been doing a much better job in keeping track of who's closed, how long they've been closed, and when their extension, when their time period runs out. So it's not as much of a problem as it used to be.
That's Baltimore City Liquor Board watchdog Becky Lundberg-Witt, an attorney with the Community Law Center. We're talking about the center's blog, Booze News.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. What should people do if they believe there are problems stemming from a bar in their neighborhood? Noisy patrons, litter, even violence. We're continuing our conversation with Becky Witt, lawyer for the nonprofit Community Law Center, whose work with residents navigates this path. She also writes the Liquor Board Watchdog blog called Booze News. Becky, what steps should people follow if they believe they have a problem bar in their neighborhood?
Well, first of all, we always encourage neighbors to do their best to try to communicate directly with the licensee when they have an issue.
The bar owner.
Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, especially with more nuisance level issues, those things can be fixed without going down to the liquor board and having the liquor board make a decision. So things like trash, if a licensee doesn't have the proper trash disposal and trash is blowing around everywhere, that can sometimes be fixed with a conversation about, hey, we need a dumpster for this area. But some issues are more to do with violent crime. And in those cases, talking with the licensee is not always possible or doesn't really get you anywhere. So what's very important to me as a person who represents community groups is to build a record of very specific incidents that you can point to over time. So oftentimes people come into a hearing and they'll talk about how, kind of in generalities, about how their lives have been impacted, but they don't have specific things to point to. So the way you build a record is creating 311 complaints, which you can do on your phone, online. You can do it through the 311 app. And then reaching out, if there are more dangerous kind of complaints, creating a relationship with your local police district, getting police reports and that kind of thing, and making sure that those are being forwarded to the liquor board for violation hearings.
Let me make sure I understand your point about creating 311 calls, mm-hmm. so that even if the 311 call is not being routed within the city's operations to the liquor board, if you've got it on your phone or if you've created it, you can bring it to the attention of the liquor board yourself.
Right. So people have a lot of different opinions about the 311 system, about whether it works properly, about whether their complaints are being responded to. And I respect all of those concerns and complaints because it hasn't always worked well. What I still encourage people to make those 311 complaints because it creates a record of exactly what your problem was, exactly on what day and at what time, so that you're not just speaking in generalities about loud music, but you can say, on this day, I called 311, and I have a record of that. And you can go back and look up those 311 complaints later.
Some establishments have complained they aren't to blame for crime. They just happen to be located in the area where there is a lot of crime.
Yeah, that's true. And to be sure, certainly things that happen outside of the establishment that don't have anything to do with the patrons of the establishment, I can understand that. Public health research does show, though, that alcohol does contribute. It's one factor that contributes to crime. And so it makes sense, to the extent that issues happen within the licensee's premises, that area is under the control of the licensee, and it's their responsibility to make sure that people are not selling drugs or doing other things that harm each other or the community.
So Booze News follows protests of license renewals. Mm-hmm. How often do protests like that succeed?
Pretty rarely. So the protest process actually, the communities submit a petition by the end of March, so it's coming up right now, and then the hearings are held in April. Usually, I've been observing these hearings since 2013, oftentimes it's between 8 and 12 of all the licenses in the city are protested by the community, and then maybe, depending on the year, two or three might be not renewed out of those 8 to 12. So it's a pretty small number that are not renewed.
And the Liquor Board's meetings are public, but you're doing a lot of work to make it easy for people to read about what happened and to see the documents presented. Why?
The hearings are public, but I think that being there regularly and watching the hearings is just good for it's good for people to be able to read it, because people don't always have the time to watch the whole hearing. They take a while, and they can be pretty repetitive. So being able to kind of condense that information is useful, I think. And to provide some commentary and I'm always from the community's perspective, because I represent community associations, but to provide some information in context, I think is helpful for community members.
Do you get a sense of what kind of readership you have?
I don't know what our readership actually is or what our stats are, but I do run into people all over the city in every kind of random situation that read it or are familiar with it. So I think a lot of people find it pretty interesting.
After immersing yourself in the city's liquor laws, do you find yourself paying extra attention when you're at a restaurant or a bar?
I do. I definitely always look for the license on the wall. Yeah, I definitely keep an eye out when I'm out and about in the city.
The license on the wall, is it a violation if it's not posted there?
It is.
Have you brought that complaint?
I don't think I have. I always just check to make sure it's there. But no, I don't think I've actually found somebody not having a license. One time I went over to a friend's house, and they had actually printed out a fake liquor license and put it on their wall so that I wouldn't turn them in. It was a joke. But
Becky Lundberg-Witt is a staff attorney with the Community Law Center and a blogger for Booze News. The next meeting of the Baltimore City Liquor Board is next week, Thursday, March 14th at 10:30 a.m. in room 215 at City Hall. I'm Sheila Cast.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.